Hey Mark, are you ready?
Yes, sir. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Sarah without an H, are you ready?
I'm ready, sir.
Sarah with an H, are you ready?
Yes, sir, I'm ready.
Awesome. All right. Welcome to Flop Club Pop-Up with the subject being email professionalism. Sorry, not a lot of witty banter since Master Sergeant McConaughey is out of the office. No theme song either to start us off, unfortunately. But we'll just get started right with the important subject. As the invite suggests, you never get a second chance to make a first impression, and how you communicate via email, how to organize and prioritize and deal with the tyranny of your inbox, and how you think about email says a lot about your officership and your professionalism, the op and flop. So we pulled together this esteemed group of senior JAGs to talk about email. And as we know, it's one of the many pet peeves, Lieutenant Colonel Rosenau, and one issue he focuses on when he develops, and that's air quotes around that one, his young JAGs into full-up legal professionals, those who survive, of course. So I thought we'd start by letting him talk about email professionalism, his approach to the terror in the inbox. So Mark, why don't you take it away? The rest of us will jump in to keep you on track. I think often, probably regularly, probably rudely as well. But you can start, and we'll see how long we let you go.
No, I appreciate, sir, the construction of there being multiple ways. There is one way, and it's the way that we're about to talk about. No, that's and the captains in my office who have heard me talk about this stuff, this is all new content. I've repackaged it a little bit for this setting. So you're going to learn a lot too, or at least you're going to choose to not learn a lot again today. Sir, thank you for this opportunity to talk to everyone. It almost is sad that we don't have mail because without the E, I think people treated this kind of seriously when you had to wait for it, when you had to send it by post, right? I think there's even an Arcade Fire song about this. And if anybody gets that reference and you actually know the song, God bless you. That's as current as I get. There's six things that I want to talk about here as an organizing, at least for me, schema to approaching email. So I'm going to hit those six things real quick and then kind of break them out one by one if that works. And again, questions along the way or interruptions would be great. I can't monitor the chat while I'm talking to you right now, so please speak up. First thing, this is a kind of a pro tip, read your email. My second thing would say, use your inbox as a sorting device. The third, organize your email, understanding that the filing system you design is itself work product. And I'll come back to that a lot. Fourth, organize your email in a way that surfaces important information. I think there's some labor saving that goes on or can go on. Fifth, treat every Air Force email as if it will be read into the congressional record, one of my favorites. And then sixth, finally, send separate emails within reason when dealing with separate issues. Okay, going back to the top in terms of reading your email, I think it's not too much to say that it's a baseline requirement of the practice of law to review the things that are sent to you. And when you carry unread email between days, you absolutely risk undermining your ability to provide good advice or to identify what might be a time-sensitive issue. I understand that it's difficult when balancing against other obligations, like sitting down in quiet repose and let's ponder together about the potential paths to admissibility of this evidence, for instance, or is this bake sale one of the bake sales that we think can get through the gates? I understand that it's hard to triage along the way, but if you find yourself falling behind, what I would say is consider regularly blocking out time on your calendar and then holding fast to that schedule. So if you have like an idea of, well, 15 minutes at the end of the day, I make a big dent in these things or I get towards where I'm going, and then you don't give yourself that 15 minutes, maybe you punish yourself by carrying it over, and the next day you owe yourself 30 minutes of email discipline. I'll pause there, sir, at that one, if there's any inputs or ingest from anybody.
I was hoping you weren't going to pause and I was just going to interrupt and stop you. But since you took the pause, let me add on to that. I think I've seen, well, I don't think any of us would disagree that reading your email is important. I will say, one of the things that folks debate is whether folks can actually multitask or not. I think most psychologists say you can't. I'm looking directly at Colonel Short doodling on her pad over there. But I think most experts say you really can't. And one of the problems I think folks use sort of the notification pop-up on their email as the way to see whether an email is important or not, and it distracts. And I think when all kinds of folks talk about how their day is so frantic and hectic, that your tip about sort of setting aside a time to check your email and grind it down every day is very important. In fact, I think it's worthwhile just to go ahead and turn that notification pop-up off. Turn off the sound, turn off the notification, and have that time set across or set aside on your schedule to read your email. At least, you know, check it maybe every hour just to make sure there isn't that earth-shattering, urgent thing that needs to be responded to. And just as a tip, if you want to take a look at what your settings are, it's set to automatically do notifications. So if you go into Mail, go into Options, open the Options box, and then go to Mail, click on Mail, and then you'll see a section down about two tabs. It's called Message Arrival. Maybe it's three tabs down, and you can change how your messages show up as they come to you. And actually, while you're in there in that options on the mail block, go ahead and scroll through. There's a lot of different things that are set automatically that may not be the way you want to do it. I'll come back and reference this later in terms of prioritizing your day, because you can make incoming emails different colors. You can send them different places. There's a lot of stuff you can do with email. So you got something you want
to
add?
So to kind of tag on that, I'm probably not disciplined enough to turn off my notifications. I will admit that. But I think that there are times, if you are working on a project, that you just need to, I just close my Outlook altogether sometimes. Okay. And just, because it's just a distraction and I can't focus on what I want to do. But to tag on to what Colonel Rosno said, I cannot go home at the end of the workday knowing that I have a bunch of unread emails. It pains me, and I think you're going to get there eventually, probably, Mark. But you know, nothing pains me more is when I look over somebody's shoulder and I see they have like 300 emails and 150 of them have never been read, and it gives me so much anxiety. So I think you've got to find a system that works for you. But kind of my goal is usually, I feel good about life if I've gotten more than 30 emails in my inbox and I know what they all mean, where they're all going. Anything more than that, and I know life is about to get crazy. So I think there's some discipline involved in that as well, and we'll probably get more onto that.
But you're talking about emails that are in your box. You have read all the emails.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Like, there's not, there might be one maybe for my husband that I'm like, yeah, I'll get to it eventually.
I think we all see that. I know Mark and I have talked about it, but if we say that little black number by your box that says 81 emails, we happen to pass by your computer, you're going to get a talking to. That is not acceptable. Mark, do you have any opinions on that?
No, it's as if we've talked to one another in a professional setting that's available online as well for 11 hours straight, because that's an incredible segue into what my next observation would be for everyone, which is use your inbox as a sorting device. You're dead on. I guess there can be a debate about this, although I'm not convinced by it. I would say that they shouldn't linger in your inbox. They should be adjudicated. And when I say as a second point that your inbox can be implemented as a sorting device, if it sits in your inbox and it requires your action, it puts into proper perspective where you are in terms of delivering legal services to your client. If you got 95 things that you are actively managing, you're wrong. You're not doing 95 things at once. You're paying attention to particular things. You're moving them along in their way and you're adjudicating it. There are every now and then some emails that continually come up and crop up and you got to go back to because there's a lot of detail and information in them. But if they're that important, you can still have a filing system into which you would put them. The problem with carrying over, from my perspective, a lot of emails in your inbox is that it dilutes the meaning of having things to do. It encourages what I would call misbehavior, not a choice, of not reviewing unread messages that are sent into you. So I would, at least for my measure, I try and get the inbox count in the single digits of what you're trying to carry over day to day to day in terms of actively managing things. I'd use a different program than Inbox to have a lot of information sitting in, because Inbox really should be cleared out as I imagine it. And that still keeps into perspective that in the middle of a trial, you might end up getting into 20 or 30 emails, not unread. Those are a unicorn. Those don't exist, at least in the world that I manage here, sir. But I try and keep it in single digits these are my actions to take type emails.
Swart says you should have improved that.
Done. Let's go. All right, hold on. Well, I got to hide the emails.
I tend not to want to agree with Roosevelt on anything, but I will tell you, if my goal is always to have in my inbox the number of emails.
Oh, he's doing it.
Oh, okay, good.
It's right here.
Nice.
And I mean, I can.
My goal is never to have that slide bar show up on my inbox. To have only the emails in there that you can see on the display when it's in there.
And then, just for our listeners for the listeners who can't see it, who I know are downloading the podcast and listening to it in the future, it was four items, one unread, and as you might have heard earlier, that was an email that arrived during this briefing. So,
okay, that's a good point. So, Mark, I won't interrupt you yet, but this kind of goes into your next point. You showed it up there. I'll float up with the show. Where is your thing? Well, I was going to show your, why don't you put yours back up and talk a little bit about your organizing.
Yeah, I'll share it right now.
I thought I had mine.
No, it's all good, sir. So this is, we can upload this image too. And again, this is just one way to skin a cat, as the phrase goes. Where is this thing? Can I share it in a different way, window? I'm sorry, everyone. Pictures, photos, there. Is this sharing?
Yes.
Okay, and again, I would have been better at that, better prepared, but we're doing this live. So here's an example of my inbox, and again, it'll be available for everybody who goes to whatever the Flop SharePoint is. I would have a totally different approach for this if I were a military judge, for instance, or if I was doing some other kind of job for the Air Force. But as a deputy staff judge advocate, this is what made sense to me. So the first thing is look the inbox. You can see I had four items at that time too. And then I had a couple drafts that I was working on that were saved in there, so I'd be ready to send an email out as soon as something developed. And then in the archive, that's just indicating to you that I've moved it out of the inbox. Now that's still, you can tell from the hierarchy, that's not in a PST. That's not in something that I've carried over onto my hard drive, which is a different conversation about backing these things up. That is available online. So if I log in to webmail from wherever I have access, I can see all of these things as accurately, at least as I think, accurately represented here. And the only thing that I would highlight to you, and this is an example, maybe you can translate it into your practice, but you can at least think about this and using it for your practice on email. I regularly, as a deputy, am called upon to orient myself to what's the next case, when is this going, what's the sense of urgency on it. And what I've done here in the courts ahead is just by naming these file folders in that convention, which is year, month, and then day of when that trial is going to start, and then putting the dash in the accused last name, I'm now oriented. So when it comes up that we have, you know, this case going, or there's looking like a delay, or we want to docket something else during that week, yeah, you can slide over to a calendar. But I also already know from just glancing at this, and the way that I approach my work for the day, for the week, for the month, is here's what's coming up next. Here's when my trial is going to go. So this is just an easy example of where organizing your email in a way that's strategic, or it's intelligent, or at least thought about, it accomplishes work for you. And then the other thing I would tell you all as a general principle, and I'll keep it shared just for a little bit longer, you need to think about not just reading your email as being a baseline requirement of the practice of law. I'll tell you this, the act of filing your email, and therefore the act of building a system to file your email, is part of the work that you get paid for. And just let that sit. You are not getting paid just to return whatever is the best version of advice that you can render with this giant anchor around your neck of having 300 unread emails and having 3,000 in your inbox. If you're called upon, for instance, in the very likely and common circumstance of a FOIA request, a discovery request, a congressional inquiry, PR complaints, whatever it is, to pull out everything that's responsive to a particular task, you cannot rely on search terms through Outlook. You cannot rely on your recollection. The throughput of our practice is just, it's too wide. It's too much. The speed is too great. You gotta have a system where you kind of remember where things should be. You have search terms. You have a system where you're dogmatic about putting things into their proper place. And then when you're called upon to say, as an officer of this court, I've looked through and we do not have anything else responsive, you're not just, well, Outlook caps out at 250 results, so I couldn't find a judge.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, everybody's going to organize differently. As an SJA, I organize by SJAs and by base, and so it's always easy when an issue comes up, I can narrow the search down to a particular installation. I think also, just a quick tip on this as well, we're talking about emails in your inbox. God, I hope people don't have 3,000 emails in their inbox, but they probably do. It's also important, I think, to remember that it becomes difficult to search for sent items when there's, you know, thousands and thousands of sent items. Particularly when you send something you think is important, it's worth having some sort of process where you go back into sent items periodically and just pull those over to that same filing system that you've created. So again, like Mark says, it's easier to find when you're going to need to find it within the future. Okay, go ahead, Mark.
Thank you, sir. I can stop. Same kind of follow-up here, organizing your email in a way that surfaces important information. We had a few of these things here. The only thing that I would mention that I didn't do in the first pass on this one, and thank you for giving me an opportunity to take a second, is when you organize your email in a way that surfaces information, it does work for you. And it's not just the filing system that you're required to put in. So here's one. Here's an example, right? As a deputy, I am called upon regularly to accomplish OPRs or build award packages. You might have heard of this 3rd Air Force Military Justice Team of the Quarter Award that Ramstein not always wins, despite my best efforts and really my team's best efforts, my best advocacy. But we mostly win. I'd say more often than not, we win it. It's probably too much to say that even. But my point is, just this naming convention on Courts Ahead, when I was sharing that a second ago, that answers the mail. That tells me that case went inside that quarter. So when you are otherwise called upon to do it, yeah, you could build a spreadsheet. I mean, you could go back and corral EOJs by date. There's all different ways to do it. But one of the things I'm telling you, and Colonel Thompson and Colonel Swart and every one of the other leaders who are on the line assembled are telling you, is you got to organize your email. So why not, in the process of organizing your email, do extra work that you know is around the bend? So that's one thing with the OPRs. And the other thing is, like, the Courts Ahead, you can rename these things. So for instance, as soon as a case gets delayed, you'll remember that I named them in a way so that they get racked and stacked automatically, chronologically. So if a case gets delayed by 4 months, I change that date, it immediately goes to its proper place in the queue. And then if I move it, you didn't see it, but if I move it into the courts in post-trial, it immediately goes exactly where it goes, in line against our other cases in post-trial. So even 2 years from now, a year from now, 6 months from now, Article 6 inspection, whatever it happens to be, when I'm called upon, or my office, better, is called upon to answer information about when something went, that early work has surfaced the information in the moment about what's pressing, but then on the long tail of our practice as well.
Yeah, and I think people need to realize we all have our hierarchy of folders set up, and we've been doing this for a long time. Don't be overwhelmed with the idea that your hierarchy has to be perfect when you first start out. Just once you realize, once you sort of think about emails you have and then the categories they go into, just create a folder. And as you move along, you realize you need more folders. You need to rename that. You need some folders. Just do it as you move along. Something is better than nothing in terms of preparation in that sense. Okay, let's go on to your fifth one. So this is a big one. I think we get a lot of crosstalk on this.
Great. So treat every Air Force email as if it will be read into the congressional record. Now look, everybody, I know the congressional record isn't what it once was or what we imagine it once was, but it is entirely and emphatically the case that these are all official communications, at least in the sense of being on an official communications network. So what my advice to the captains is, when in doubt, do not be informal. When in doubt, do not be sarcastic. Do not use jokes. In fact, it's enough to say, just avoid those to the extent possible. If there's any chance at all that there's going to be some role played by your email in future litigation, draft it with many goals. Among those goals, I'd say be unambiguous, be professional. And then I also think this is a point of improvement for maybe some of the people who are just starting out, be sufficiently detailed to stand alone. So look, I'm not saying every single time that you write an email, you've got to bring everybody up to date as if it's going to be disconnected in time and space from everything else, and it's going to be read on its four corners. And yet, it sometimes is so helpful, especially in litigation, to just spend the extra time to put a little bit of detail in there. So one of the examples I give my captains often is when you're writing back and forth with the defense counsel, just moving it from like a prosecutor's perspective here, when you're writing back and forth and you know that you're going to be denying something, for instance, in discovery, you can very quickly put that in a discovery response filing that's formal, but maybe there's an email exchange that's going on and you're trying to provoke a conversation you're on the near occasion of trial. Okay, fine. When you write back, you need to be very deliberate about the language that's used, something along the lines of, except upon a greater showing of relevance and necessity, your request for discovery is denied. We would ask that in the interest of keeping our trial on track and given your request for speedy trial, that you seek any relief from the court as soon as practicable. We are standing by for any clarifications or to respond to any motion in a timely manner. I'm just riffing them, right? That's off the top of my head. You'd say something like that in the email, but you're spending a little bit of extra time on the email because that email is just on its way as an appellate exhibit into the record that's available, generally speaking, for people, although I know not all the attachments are going to be on our PACER-like system, but it is definitely going to be on the record in front of the military judge. And why not make it so that if the email that is a conditioned precedent to them seeking relief from the court, a denial from the government, why not make that email also start advocating your position in terms of reasonableness? Last thing, don't send emails to the ADC like, hey, Johnny, I'm trying to get a hold of you, bud. Can you call me back when you get a minute? Or text them. That email or that text that you're trying to provoke, for instance, a docketing conference, if another couple days go by, you haven't really developed the factual record such that you can rely on it if we're going to be dealing with people's availability down the road. So instead, take the extra couple of seconds, write the case name in there, and say, I'm reaching out to you to try and docket this case. Please get back to me as soon as you can. Thanks.
Great. Okay, I'm going to throw it out to Sarah and H in a second, but let me just a couple things on that. Yeah, I think you have to have an appropriate tone in your email, which I think is funny coming from me because my tone in emails can be somewhat informal, but professionally informal. I like the thing. And I try not to use email as a texting device. That's what I use Teams for most anything. So yeah, I do always operate just like every senior leader will say. They usually say, expect to read it in the New York Times, the email comes up. So I'm never worried that if an email comes up, except when I may have sent to Sarah Mountain today on a particular case. But other than that one email, I'm never worried about them showing up in the congressional record. And I think Colonel Keeley had another appointment, so she may not be on, but she did send a couple points as well. She, you know, same thing, right? If you're in doubt about the tone or substance of an email, you know, you don't have to send it immediately after you prepare it. Put it in your draft box, or even better, or a different way, print it out and show it to somebody and ask them the question, hey, if you receive this, what would be your response to it? That's probably a good way to do it. So let's take a couple minutes. I think this is a good sort of segue to just kind of talking about what an appropriate email looks like, things to do. So I think we'll kind of go around the room, that room being UK, Germany, and all places in between. Let me throw it out to Sarah Mountain, because I know Sarah's got some points on appropriateness of emails as well.
I have a couple things listed here, and I know that a number of my captains are going to sound a little bit familiar. But one of the things I really, really try to do, and it will try to do here, it not only helps me, it also helps the team attending make sure that you have a clear and direct subject line. Identify and tell your receiver exactly what you want from them. So for example, if I'm getting something from one of my captains that they need my concurrence on like an injury punishment, in that subject line, say, for your approval, or sending something up to Colonel Pan on the top, and say, for your signature. So immediately, right at that moment, who I am. Can you guys hear me okay?
Kind of.
All right. I'll try this. Is that better, or should I hop off and hop back on?
Try that for me.
Okay.
Did we lose you?
Can she jump down? No, she's fine.
Is that better? Or is that, yeah.
Just keep going and we'll let you know.
Okay. So, like I said, have a clear direct subject line, and it is important to have a deadline. Put that in the book, and it helps the recipients to you.
Oh, sir, I'm so sorry, but it's getting worse. What? Go to Barak's computer, because she came on earlier and sounded fine. And while you do that, I'll throw it over to Swart and let her opine about email appropriateness. So.
Lucky me. So one thing that came to mind, Thompson was telling his story. I had, many times, particularly back in my day, I'm echoing that too. All right. Anyways, back in my day, when I used to try cases, if I was really angry, I would type off my email to counsel and then give it my drafts and look at it again in the morning. And usually the next day, it would be a complete rewrite because I realized that I was doing something out of anger and emotion. So it's always good to take that time. And I do that with Colonel Thompson all the time.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Can you hear me, sir?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Sarah.
Okay. All right, so I'll try this again. All right, the first thing that I had was to make sure you have a direct and clear subject line. Tell your receiver what you want from them and when. So, for example, if you want your boss's concurrence or approval on something, then you say, for your approval, and then subject, and then the time or date that it is due. Or for your signature, or if it's just for situational awareness, you have FYSA only on the top. So again, that it alerts you as well as your receiver exactly what is wanted from them. We try to do that in our office so that it helps each other within the office manage their own inboxes, but you know, we're still working on that piece. As I also mentioned here, when you're writing a letter or an email to a commander or your boss, follow the bluff format. Let them know upfront what you want. And then you have a quick section that succinctly lays out the facts, the background, the conclusion, and the recommendation. And if in fact that you're going to be, or you know that your boss is prepping an email that's going to go up to, for example, General Reed, because when we have actions such as officer misconduct or senior enlisted misconduct, you know, there is that requirement that we are coordinating those with Third Air Force. And I prepped the email for my wing commander already, filled out with General Reed's email address, my email address, Colonel BT email's address, and then I draft that draft email to him, and then I attach it to an email so that, again, it just assures, it saves my boss time, it ensures that the right people are CC'd on that message. I usually draft up those in my office. I don't necessarily have the captains do it because I know that they're super busy, but it is something that you'll probably need to, as captains, develop those skills, because you move into those roles, it just makes communication easier for your boss. When listing a number of people in the to line, make sure it's clear in the body of the email who is exactly being asked to do what. I can't tell you how many times I've seen an email and there's like 10 people in the to line, and then a general message that says for your action, and then nobody does anything with that email.
Yeah.
That's super frustrating. So in order for you to avoid sending an email that doesn't get responded to, make sure that you're only putting the person that is intended to do the action in that line, in the to line, and then make sure that you put everybody else who needs that maybe in the CC line. But more importantly, if everyone is in the to line, make sure that the people in the to line understand that you need something from them. If you're receiving an email where you're in the to line with a group of others, respond to that email. Acknowledge that you received the email, and then make sure that you coordinate with the other people in your office that are on that email, so you make sure who is actually responding to what. Again, I can't tell you how many times emails don't get responded to, or you know, I see an email and I'm like, oh yeah, that's not for me, and then somebody's come back and I'm like, hey, where's your input? And then I was like, oh yeah, sorry, I did that to Colonel BT the other day. Be mindful who is on the to line. You gotta make sure that you're typing the right name and you're verifying the name. Major Cop in our office, her husband has the same last name. His name's Andrew, her name's April. So if I do Cop, comma, A, it depends upon who I wrote the email to last, but our office, myself included, have accidentally included one and not the other when the other was supposed to be the recipient. And then again, make sure that after you have typed out that two line, that you actually go up and look, make sure that you've typed it to the right person, to the right location, and the right email. I think I've hit on this before, but reply to emails in a timely fashion. I really don't like it when people don't respond to emails, and I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm waiting, or when people are waiting for me, I'm like, oh man, I'm really sorry. We talked about this earlier with Lieutenant Colonel Rosenau, and he said, read your email. I set aside the end of the day almost every day to go through my entire email box for that day, and then a couple of days, you know, later, just to make sure that I haven't missed anything, because that little time at the end of the day saves me so much time the next day. If I can't get through it that night, I will make sure that I have extra time in the morning to get through that. Nothing is confidential. I think Lieutenant Colonel Rosenau did adequately cover that, but again, just remember, everything that you send, think about if it ended up on the front page of a paper. See, think about whether it would end up being read in court or become sort of part of any sort of formal record. Let's see here. Always spell check over percent before sending your email, especially if it's to your boss or it's outside of base. Always, always, always include a signature block, especially being overseas. It is so annoying when you are also overseas and you're talking to somebody back in the States and they don't have a signature block, or they don't have their full email address, or they don't have a DSN, and they don't have the DSN area code. Save people time by always including your signature block and your phone number and your email at the end of your email. And you can set this up in Outlook. You can even attach your signature block to replies. If you need some help in figuring that out, please give me a call. I'm happy to walk you through that one. Let's see here. One thing that I also try to do is after I've written a really important email, I write the email first, and then afterwards I add in the people in the to line to just make sure that I don't inadvertently send a message to somebody that I don't intend to do so. I once was writing an email for General Wood and I accidentally hit send. It was supposed to be a draft that I was writing for my boss to send to him. And I was like, oops, sorry, sir. So again, you know, if you're writing a really important email, add the people in the to line last and verify that it's correct. Let's see here. I would also say keep your fonts in your email classic, not funky. Watch your tone. Don't send an email when you're mad. And then finally, out of office. When you're out of office, make sure that your out of office is on. Make sure that you've identified a POC in your out of office as to who they can contact in your absence. Give their phone numbers and give their emails. And if you have different POCs for different topics in your office, make sure that you include who those are. And sir, I think that's basically all I've got for you. Standing by for any questions.
So my number one question is, would Comic Sans be an appropriate font for emails?
Tested.
Is that yours, sir?
No. Okay, so I completely agree. Just let me hit a couple of points that you did. On the signature block, it's just go into options again. We talked about that. Options and then mail and then signatures. Please set it to put your signature on your original email and on your replies. I just gotta have that. No little pithy sayings in your signature block. Your signature block is just your signature block. No sayings by Einstein or something like that. I think the rule actually in one of the AFI says you're not supposed to do that. If you haven't uploaded your official photo, like you know, Mark Rosenau has this, I'm looking at him staring at us from the screen. This is a little scary actually. You might want a better official photo than Mark Scott, but if you get a good official photo, load that up as well so it's, oh, Sarah's looking at you. You haven't done that, have you?
Oh, I have a terrible official photo. It will not see the light of day.
Everybody else should load up their official photos and their happy little faces show up on the email. I think that's professional this day and age.
Just to be clear, yeah. Right? My official photo is on brand. It's just not to your liking.
Right. It's the eyes that just kind of make me tremble when I see them staring at me.
I gotta thank the photographer for that, sir. That's pretty good.
Colonel Keeley, I don't know if Colonel Keeley was able to join us. She had a couple other points. Let me just go through those. Good point here. Using all capital letters, I think we all know this from social media, is the same as yelling at somebody. So please avoid doing that. Do not use dear for emails, like dear general. Figure out a better salutation. She notes that it's good practice to ask permission before forwarding an email, unless it's purely something informational, like just pushing out an announcement. Good tip here too, in a lot of different ways, not to pander, but it's always useful to see how your boss does business, not just in email. But if your boss, sends emails in a particular way, there's no reason why you can't mirror that, because that's probably how they want to receive information. So take a look and try to follow that. And I think most of us have hit the others. Oh, here's a good one. This may some debate. The historical debate between V/R, B/R, what are the others?
I've seen best.
Best, yeah. So my position is you almost always just use B/R.
Slash R.
Dash R would be odd. B/R is probably the appropriate way to do that. I mean, you can do it with subordinates if you're very senior, just best regard, I guess, but I think VR is just taken sort of a commonplace definition as a sort of a thanks sort of a way to do it. You don't do it. How do you do it?
I just do the VR. I think it's one of those things that I just don't want to take the time to think about and worry about, right? Everybody else does it. Personally, I think it seems a little silly. But if I need to end an email in such a way that is professional and respectful, that's going to be acceptable. Nobody's ever going to question that.
Yeah.
So okay. Just roll with it.
And so those are Colonel Keeley's all great points. I think we've mentioned this a couple of times, so it's worth a segue in this a little bit. In terms of talking about responding to emails, I think we've made it fairly clear you need to read your emails. But I think we all have, and Sarah with an H, Colonel Mountain, talked about this as well. About responding, Colonel Swart has some thoughts on this.
I do.
Okay, go.
I do. Just obviously respond to your email.
Well, thank you very much for your input on that one. All right, I'm going to skip Colonel Swart. So this is, I have a big thing on this one. So she was really just setting me up to show what a great answer I have compared to Burgess' unthoughtful comments she's throwing out at this very important event. This is my do unto others philosophy in terms of responding. If someone sends me an email, I mean, they are almost always going to get a reply. I mean, even to bulk emails. I think everybody knows how I feel about the SIR process, but I certainly appreciate the effort of those putting them together and sending them out on that long email list. I always try to at least send back a copy thanks, just to let them know that somebody's actually reading their emails. It's just, again, do one to others. I mean, think about working on a project for weeks, sending out for comments to a group or sending out the final product. And the response you get is, I didn't bring my sound effects, crickets. You get nothing back. It's frustrating. I mean, likely y'all do a great job on those kind of things, and the recipients, who will assume for purposes of today's discussion, actually read the email and attachment. They probably have nothing to add, but it's common courtesy, frankly, to just to take the 3 to 5 seconds after review and shoot back a thanks or a good to go or nothing to add or thanks for working this. I mean, I just do not understand why that is so hard. If a person came up to you and you're sitting around like a water cooler and they hand you a project they've been working on, you're not going to just stare back at them in silence and not say anything. It kind of goes to Mark's earlier point. If you mail somebody, you know, you're expecting some sort of answer. I just don't understand why we don't do that, particularly when a senior leader sends out an email. And I mean, there's a spectrum. If TJAG is sending a blast out to the entire JAG Corps, probably a thanks, General Rockwell, is not required. And honestly, having worked up in the building, he's not going to read it anyhow. His execs are going to read it and laugh at you for responding because you're such a tool. But if your SKA sends out an email to the office as a whole or the division you work in, I mean, how hard is it to send a reply back, you know, copy Sirman or on it Sirman? I mean, when I was a wing SJA back in the day, I can always count on someone, sometimes two people in the office, to make the courtesy reply to all those emails I sent out. And I'll be honest, I think we probably all agree, that makes that person stand out. Because not everybody does it. So rarely that people do it. When somebody does just send you a courteous reply to an email that's sent out, it sticks out to you. At least it sticks out to me. And not surprisingly, the CGO that would do that was always the one in the office raising their hand for that volunteer opportunity or that opportunity to excel that I would send out. So I hate to, again, give Mark any credit for anything, but he's a great example of this. I mean, every time I send him an email with him as a recipient, he's just copied on it. He always gives me a response. You know, got it, copy, sir, just something like that. So I know he's paying attention, or at least he's pretending to pay attention, so that's great. And I do the same thing. I mean, the general sends me an email, even if it doesn't require a response, he's going to get a thanks, general, back. Just to make the point that I read it. And he can assume that I'm reading it because he's the general, but it doesn't hurt to send a quick thanks back. So, for example, and I'm definitely not asking you all to reply every time I send a flop email out to the group, I swear I'm not, but I start thinking about a reply with a courtesy whenever doing so, I think my definition, doesn't seem weird, like the TJ email. And so I think a good rule of thumb, if you're on an email from a senior leader with five or fewer recipients, regardless if you're in the two line, clearly if you're in the two line, but even if you're in the copy line, you probably should reply with something. Like I think Colonel Mountain talked about earlier, or maybe it's someone else talked about, you at least got to figure out among the group of folks who got that email, who's going to be the one to respond. And that person can respond to the group that says, hey, we all received your emails, and we talked about it, and here's our response, just so that sender knows that everybody is reading that email. I mean, even if it's not expected, it will be appreciated. And the answer, you know, the absence of, you know, that kind of reply is certainly going to send a message you probably don't want to be sent in terms of doing that. So that's my long diatribe about responding in an appropriate way when you get emails.
Well, thank you. Now, I got a question, follow-up for you. You were talking about reply. You didn't say reply all. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because these kinds of, hey, I'm alive and I'm reading and I'm engaged emails, sometimes they get sent out to everybody. And I don't think that's what you're recommending.
That certainly sounds like a rhetorical question to me, but yes, I would totally agree that, you don't want to continue that string forever. But again, B, you don't want to look like the tool, right? Like, I'm the first to reply, and I reply all, so everybody knows I'm the first to reply to General Reed on something. No, just you don't have to show off. If you're doing that like we're suggesting you do it, just do it individually, not as a group.
And then the other question I had for you before we go on, if it's okay, and this is not loaded like the last one was, I'll accept your criticism and move right on, is timing. Let's say that you're working through your email and it's 11 o'clock at night.
Or oh, it's thank you.
12 o'clock at night. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, this is a loaded question because this is, a couple different areas. I got to thank, I know he's not listening, but I love this one. Lieutenant Colonel Johnson at Lake Mead reminded me of this one. It's the delayed delivery availability on emails, particularly for senior folks. Sending emails at off hours, outside duty hours, even if you don't expect a response, the recipient, particularly if they're junior to you, is going to think they're required to respond at that time. So unless there's something urgent that comes up after duty hours, And if there is, and it's so urgent you need to send an email, you're probably better off picking up the phone and calling somebody if it's that urgent. Put it in drafts, use delayed delivery. I do that every Sunday. Everybody gets Colonel Thompson's email at 5 a.m. on Monday morning because that's when I set the delayed delivery for, and they all go out then. It's just because the way my work schedule works that works for me, I work at non-duty times on projects that I don't otherwise have the time to do, and I don't want to set the expectation that just because I'm working at that time, all my subordinates should be working at that time. So again, bottom line, if it's important enough to send after duty hours, and you are expecting a response after duty hours, pick up the phone and call that person rather than send an email, unless email is the only way you can get a hold of them.
And then that was the opening, but then the follow up is, especially with this crowd here, what about they get an email from you, they haven't gotten to it all day, they have recognized that they haven't confirmed receipt, or maybe they're kind of digging through the last 7 months of not returning any replies to emails and they're going to put them all together today. I'm just asking, what do you as a senior leader or Colonel Swart or anybody else who's on the line wants to add in, what do you take from like the got it boss email that comes back to you at 11:45 at night from the email you sent out at 2?
I'll answer that, but I'm also going to send that out to Lieutenant Colonel Mountain.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. I was answering a question locally here. Can you repeat that?
I'm going to send that out to Colonel Swart. She's thinking about it.
I am thinking about it. To me, if somebody's responding at that time of night, then I'm worried about how they're prioritizing their day and why they're doing that so late at night. I mean, there's no reason for that. It may be one thing if I knew you were in court all day or something and you're just getting to it, but even then, it's like, unless it's related to that court, you probably shouldn't be responding to me at that point. It can wait till the next day. And depending on the topic, a couple days later, I mean, if it's something that requires an urgent request and you don't respond to me for 3 or 4 days, and then I'm questioning, like, okay, you're not meeting your email when you're supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes back to our very first comment, right? You should have a time during the day. Hopefully turn notifications off if that's not your style. That's fine. But you should recognize that Colonel BT sent you an email, and given his position, not his attitude, but his position, you probably should let him know right then or very close to that time or during that time during the duty day when you're reviewing your emails, whatever it is. Got it, sir. I'll work it, get back to you tomorrow, or something like that. I think that's probably the appropriate way to do it. I've made this clear to, I think, pretty much based on the CERT issue I talked about earlier. I do not think people should be working past duty hours on a normal day-to-day schedule. I mean, certainly there's surge time, particularly courts martial and other big events where you just happen to be out well past duty hours. But if you send me an email at 11:45, I'm not going to be happy. And I'm probably going to call your SJ and say, why is this person sending me emails at 11:45? Why do you have them working that long? Why are we burning them out on a day-to-day basis when we want to build them into long-term, valuable judge advocate resources? Why are we doing this? Why are we balancing their work time and their non-work time? So my recommendation is don't do it. If you feel like that's the only time you can get to an email, you need to talk to your boss. You need to talk to a mentor about how you prioritize your day, how you prioritize your work. And you should have listened to this either live or by podcast and know the appropriate way and when to send an email. There we go.
Thank you, sir. I think it's all dead on, and it looks like we're all in agreement on it. The one takeaway I would give you all, as a guy who does work, I think, you know, most people tell me a lot of hours, and I don't mind working late or getting up early to do this stuff, and I've had a couple jobs that have required it all the time, and so is Colonel Thompson. What's that, sir?
Not these bragging or anything, but all.
No. What I'm trying to say, I have to get that out of the way. I was clearing the throat, as it were. What I would say is it's not an unvarnished good. And I think, to be candid, I used to believe it kind of was. But as you get more, maybe adult, I don't know, if you get more experience, you see more people, you think about the things that Colonel Thompson is talking about that aren't immediately apparent, you do realize that it, again, is not an unvarnished good to be working at all hours. You know, when you're in law school and you're at the library, I use this example for the captain sometimes, and other people are studying, you always feel horrible about it, at least I did, because it's like, I'm not getting ahead. I need this library empty and just me on the weekend working, and that'll make me feel the best because I'm capitalizing on this time and I'm jumping over other people who are graded on the safe curve. And I think even across litigation, I kind of thought like, well, it says something about me and my work ethic if I'm firing off these emails at 11. But Colonel Thompson, and I just think it's dead on to say, look, during surge times, yeah, got it. If filings are due on a date, certain, and there's not a time on that date, I guess that means midnight local. So you're going to use that time. Got it. But if, as a matter of course, you're banging out these emails every night or most nights of most weeks, this is your rhythm. It does say something about your ability to manage your workflow. And I don't think as a captain, I really had perspective on that like I do now. Sir, does that get me out of the hole that I dug?
I don't think you can ever get out of the hole you've dug with me, but it gets you closer to the top. All right, we've cut you off, however. You had one more point that I want to make sure that
you Thank you. And again, I was called upon to only have enough to fill an hour. So if you want the extended version, we have it, of course, available. It's sending separate emails within reason when dealing with separate issues. So I get that sometimes, especially I'm sure from the NAF perspective, when you're overlooking things, although I haven't worked there, obviously, there might be a batching that goes on, and that's fine. And it makes sense. And okay, got it. But at our level, or more correctly, maybe at the captain action officer level, it is regularly the case that you're dealing with these issues that can be treated discreetly. Not every time, but oftentimes. So if the idea is, and we've talked about this idea a few times, that your emails are themselves a baseline requirement of the practice of law, they're a product, and the other people who are receiving from you are going to be called upon to sort them, and then maybe later on surface them, and maybe in a FOIA request deal with them. Aren't you doing some good work for the Air Force if you can find a way to separate out these individually, unrelated, but collective just based on how you're dealing with them, the individual receiving matters. Yes, there's some real value in there. So to the extent that you can make intelligent decisions and go, I'm going to deal with this case and this email, and I'm not going to be dragged in to other issues, there's value in there. And I'll give you a real example that happens oftentimes. Area Defense Council, especially when they're not at your base, but maybe even when they're at your base, want to redirect exchanges over email or combine exchanges over email and say, hey, I want these things for all of my cases. Please send them back. You need to reply back if you're thinking through these things in discrete responses, because you're packaging these, and the military judge who would be attached to that case if it goes to a case is going to be packaging these things in most circumstances, not as a joint trial, but they're going to be independent things. And putting them together make FOIA requests more difficult way down the road, make litigation more difficult. We start talking about redactions. We end up not being able to sort them easily or find them. So I would say try and split them apart, and then recognize that you literally can copy emails, not just over, but you can make multiple copies of them. So if you drag them into a folder with the control button held down, you can make an actual copy of it. So if it's relevant to two different things, they can be in two different places. That's all I got, sir.
Excellent. Yeah, I think that's a great pull away, Tim. Okay, a couple things. So in case you're not monitoring the chat box, you're listening to this podcast in the way of time, Major Ross makes a good point. He likes to spell out very respectfully for all, since it works for all audience, particularly as the chief SBC. I assume he's dealing with civilians often who don't know what V/R means. So that's a great tip. And then we're very excited this week up here at Third Air Force to have hired on a personal assistant for NAF SJA, sometimes called our intern, sometimes called our foreign exchange student, which we'll figure out why in just a moment. But Captain Bryson from Ramstein is up here this week. And as we were talking about the font for emails, he told a very funny story real quickly. So I'm just going to have him repeat. When would it be appropriate to use an odd font?
Well, it's a loaded question, Sam, because the email in question, it was while we were deployed, while I was deployed with some others, and we all got a an email over Christmas thanking us for being there and doing this and the other from General Rockwell, you know, understanding the sacrifices we were making at that time. But it was in a very odd font, and none of us could quite work it out. It was one of these kind of blocky, weird, odd-looking things. Until somebody hit on it, it was Rockwell font. General Rockwell had chosen to send a font in his own name.
That is awesome. Excellent. All right, before I go out to Sharon Mountain, because this time I'm giving a heads up, I'm coming to her in just a minute to any last-minute comments. Sarah, without an H. Oh, you actually tell the story on this. So Sarah is about to leave as Colonel Sport, is headed off to be the SJA at Hill Air Force Base. Lucky for them, sad for me, for various reasons. But when Sarah worked for me when I was at Beale, and we wrote her going away decoration, we spelt it Sarah with an H. Nobody caught it all the way through. It's now part of her official record, Sarah with an H.
I felt very appreciated to know that I worked with them for 2 years and nobody figured out how to spell my name.
So, but she has something to close this out.
The only thing I'm going to add is there's a couple of trainings that I've seen out there, PowerPoint trainings and things on email, tricks and tools. So I'll dig some of them up, and if they aren't already posted to the blog club, we'll add them up there and you can go through them. Some of them are really great ideas, and others are probably also great ideas, but too high tech for me. But for the younger generation, probably perfect.
Excellent. So. Okay. All right, Sarah Mountain, Sarah with an official H. You got anything close to that?
Thanks, sir. The other thing that I would also say is that there is a mountain of resources if you simply just Google them. When I was preparing my list, I just did a quick Google search, and it was surprising, page after page after page of tips, tricks, lots of pointers to help you succeed as you can move forward in this profession or whatever profession you choose. So use that information that's out there, because it really, really will make you more successful. And that's all I have, sir.
That's awesome. All right, so that's it for us today. Thanks, as always, for giving us a few minutes of your valuable time. Hopefully you learned something, picked up a few tips and tricks, but I guess we'll see you the next time I send out a flop bulk email, or the next time I call you up and say, tell me right now how many unread emails you have in your box. Yes, I'm not saying I will, but you better be ready. All right, next up, regular first Wednesday meet on 2 June with Lieutenant Colonel Sarah Mountain, leading the topic of L for leadership. Remember her homework, she's the one who assigned it, not us, she's the one to blame, is to recall an actual or fictional leadership style you've observed, good or bad, and write them down, maybe 3 to 5, and be ready to discuss those. We'll talk about it then, but of course, never hesitate to talk about it now. Building and writing down a leadership philosophy is so important, I think. It requires you to be introspective about your own strengths and weaknesses, if you have any weaknesses, that is. And it requires you to be true to your beliefs as you approach every leadership challenge, because you wrote those beliefs down and they're staring you there in the face, so they keep you honest. So more to come on that when Colonel Mountain leads us on the 2nd of June. As always, a great shout out to my colleague and friend, Mark Rosenau. Now that we're done with the Power Hour, now that he's done this, and again, thanks for doing this, he's headed off back to the bench, so we wish him the best of luck in that endeavor. And so now, Adam's not here to play us out, but I did pick another of my favorite songs from the 1980s to play us out. You all have a good day, and a good week, and a good weekend. Bye.
I love it.